Welcome to the MacGuffin Men, where an event so unlikely happened that we have brought back the minisode. I am similarly going through another unlikely event, having a mid-June cold, but the Raptors won the NBA championship, and weird things are happening, apparently.
It's sticking in our series of the occasional NBA Finals discussion.
Yeah, I feel like we haven't done one since 2016, which was extremely warranted because that was the year of LeBlanc, and still my argument for the greatest play in NBA history. But
I recall.
Oh, it's so good. But yeah, I mean, I owe apologies to a lot of people who I said over the years the Raptors will never ever win a title, and this is. I think I would have loved this team regardless of where they are, where they were based. Like, this is like if the Grizzlies had won the title in 2013, that was the year they made the conference finals. I would have been amped up. It's kind of reminiscent of how I felt when the Mavs won the title in 2011. It was just a team filled with people that I've always appreciated, and I was so happy to see them get their due. The other comparison point has been the Detroit Pistons of, 2004 or 2005, that year they made the mid-season trade for Rasheed Wallace. They had just changed coaches from a successful coach to Larry Brown. Like Rick Carlisle got fired, and Larry Brown took over, not unlike the Nick Nurse, Dwayne Casey thing. And just in general, like even outside of being a Raptor, I feel like I would describe myself as a lapsed Raptors fan because I was so, so in love with the Raptors for, I would say about 8 years. Like there are at least four seasons where I watched all 82 regular season games that the Raptors played. Very emotionally invested. You witnessed me be very emotionally distraught one year when they were eliminated from the playoffs on my birthday, which at one point seemed to be a tradition in the Raptors. And I was just so disappointed in the direction of the team, the Rob Babcock years when he was the GM, Colangelo drafting Bargnani with the number one pick. I mean, that was a weak draft, but still I was still a big enough fan to buy into the Bosch Garbajosa Bargnani front line, which is stupid in retrospect. And somewhere around the time when they fired Sam Mitchell, I remember watching that game and just being like, I'm done with this team. And the next day Sam Mitchell was fired and I was like, cool, season's over. I'm just going to start watching basketball to watch good basketball, because it did also coincide with me learning enough about basketball to not need to follow it just because I like the shirts that the players are wearing. Yeah. And that also happened to be a year later I had discovered League Pass, which was still in its very early stages, but that was just, I just started watching teams that I liked, you know. But the Raptors this year, Lowry has always been a player I've loved. He fits the type of player who I'm always obsessed with, the professional athlete who does not look like he should be a professional athlete. Like he just doesn't have an athlete's body. Marc Gasol has been one of my favorite players in the league for close to 10 years. As somebody I did a brief appearance on my friend Freddie's podcast, The Confederacy of Dunks, this week, which is a very fun podcast. And, regardless of my appearance, you should check it out because Freddie's very fun. And he described Marc Gasol as the defensive stalwart center who can't even jump. And and it's great. And this has every making of a team that wins one title and then just disappears into the night. But it doesn't matter because they did something that I literally never thought was possible and said it repeatedly for many years. And I said repeatedly this year, I was like, this is the best Raptors team they've ever had. And I still didn't believe. And they did it. It's unbelievable. I still don't believe it's real. I said that to Freddie. Like he asked me, how does it feel? And I said, I do not feel like it is something that was possible, you know, and I still don't feel like it was possible.
Have you checked into Wikipedia and see if it's written there on the NBA champions page?
I looked at Marc Gasol's and Kyle Lowry's Wikipedia yesterday researching for Freddie's podcast, and they list NBA champion beside both of them. And I don't know. It's so bizarre.
So it actually did happen.
I've been told. I watched every minute of it, and yet I don't know. It's so surreal.
But what I wanted to ask was how you could ever be so sure that a team could never win, considering how much changeover just happens in a professional sports team.
So you are correct. I think so. This is such a weird. So the Raptors were just a poorly run team for so long. They never had a good coach until I never even liked Dwayne Casey. Like, his rotations and unwillingness to adapt drove me crazy. Like, he wouldn't make it when they were down 2-0 in a series. He wouldn't make an adjustment to his lineup or his rotation patterns until like halfway through the third game, when it's already way too late. Whereas Nick Nurse was like, I'm going to adjust as soon as something's going wrong. And I think he really found a balance between
adjusting when adjustments were needed and not adjusting when you should just stay the course and just trust that things are going to work out. The Raptors for so long, just, I think if you look at the history of Raptors coaches before Dwayne Casey, the last three or four of them never coached again. And I think if you look at the list of, so Lenny Wilkins, I think his career ended in Toronto. I don't remember if Sam Mitchell, oh, there was somebody between him and Sam Mitchell, who is just was so bad that I can't even remember his name. He was an Indiana assistant coach who coached the team for 1 year and I think threw a lamp at Rafe Ralston at one point. He was such a bad coach. He never coached again. Sam Mitchell hasn't had a head coaching job. And the GMs are the same thing. Rob Babcock, Glenn Grunwald. I know Glenn Grunwald has worked in other offices. I think Rob Babcock just disappeared entirely. He's the guy that made the Vince Carter trade, and it was not a good trade. And it was just a decade of disillusionment. You know, it's like anytime you see an organization, like, I was 20 to 24 when these things are happening. Like, I'm not super smart, but you're just like, I know this is stupid. You're getting
Yeah,
paid
but
to not know this is stupid, you know?
yeah, I just think that eventually something's got to hit right, unless you feel that there's something intrinsically wrong about Toronto or how they got people or something like that,
Well,
right?
I mean, eventually, but there are still five. I think there are five NBA teams that have never won the title, you know? And all of those teams, I mean, all of those teams have been around for longer than the Raptors, with the exception of the Grizzlies, who are exactly as old as the Raptors. But,
Yeah.
like, there's no, like, the Suns haven't won a title. There's no guarantee they'll ever win a title. They've been horrible for since Steve Nash left, basically. And are similarly plagued with organizational issues. And I think the thing I should have done more was trust Masai Ujiri, the Raptors president, and the guy who built this team. But even that feels kind of dishonest, because he was starting to rebuild the team and then they just got good by accident and then he couldn't do it. Like, so an important step in the Raptors building the team that they have now was that when they traded away Rudy Gay, I think it was 2013 or something, they traded him in September, or sorry, December. And they were doing that because they were trying to tear down the team. He was also trying to trade Kyle Lowry to the Knicks, but the Knicks wouldn't give him an extra draft pick that he wanted, so they called that off. One in a long list of times Masai has attempted to trade Kyle Lowry, including earlier this year when he tried to trade him, but so it goes. But so he was trying to tear down the team so that he could rebuild it. He was still pretty new and he wanted to, like, put his stamp on the team, essentially. But then the Raptors started to be good, and the trade was a good trade. They got Gravis Vasquez, John Salmons, I think Pat was in that trade, Patrick Patterson, and they just sort of built a bench. And then now that they had more good players, Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan kind of stepped up and built the team that existed more or less until last summer, you know, with various parts changing throughout. But I never believed in those teams ever. And I had gotten in a lot of arguments with people when Kawhi was traded for DeMar DeRozan, people who were, like, very loyal to DeMar DeRozan. And I'm like, yes, I know he's given a lot to the city, all these things, but Kawhi is an infinitely better player. One of these two players will make the Hall of Fame, you know? So I should have trusted Masai, but also there was so much luck involved. Like, he was tearing down this team and then they just got good by accident and then he couldn't do it, you know? And jumped to 6 years later and they've got rings, you know? I don't know.
Yeah, it's
It's
well, the
so
thing
weird.
is.
Like, no team will ever replicate what the Raptors did. It's just so bizarre. They were trying to tank in 2013 and they just couldn't.
But do you think there'll be more rental players like Kawhi, whether he leaves or not?
Mm-hmm.
Like that idea of getting a superstar late? And
I think it's all dependent on the player, you know, like when that trade happened, like it made sense for the Raptors because the Raptors were done with this team. And I think Kyle Lowry is kind of on an untradeable contract just because he's getting paid so much and he's a 33-year-old point guard. I think he's going to make $34 million next year, I think, which is more than he's like really worth to most teams unless you're already in contention. So which is the Raptors and no other team, right? Like the amount of assets you'd have to give up to get Kyle Lowry isn't worth it for any other team. But yeah, they were basically going to have to rebuild if the Kawhi thing didn't work out. And, but they were going to rebuild anyway because they knew they had reached the logical limit of the DeMar, DeRozan, and Kyle Lowry teams. So it was just sort of, it wasn't even a gamble. It was just like, this makes sense. This is like trying one more time, but trying with a new vibe and with a player that's so much better. And also Danny Green, I know he had a real up and down playoffs, but yeah, he was still 6'6 and a good defender, which counts for a lot in the NBA. Like, 3-and-D guys are not 3-and-D being 3-point shooter who can also play good defense. They're not easy to find, you know. Even when he's not hitting the three as much as you'd expect him to, still got the defense, you know. So
see, but I guess I see what you mean. But I was gonna say if this was just the next thing that happened in that list of horrible GM and coaching decisions that you listed earlier, right? Like, say they traded away DeRozan and just was horrible.
Yeah.
Like, Kawhi got injured and or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if that went south for whatever reason.
People would have been upset, for sure. I just sort of think that, like, in my eyes, I had already seen the end of the team, you know, and it was just, like, it was going to get tough eventually. It was just they were maybe accelerating the toughness by a year, you know, if the Kawhi thing didn't work out.
Yeah, I would just wonder what this year would have been like if it was just stalled out in the first round or something again.
Yeah. Oh, it would have been bad if they didn't get out of the second round. People would have been like, "So what do we do this for?" Especially with Kawhi leaving, or probably leaving. But yeah, and
you think that's what's going to happen?
I don't know. I don't know who to believe. I've been saying it all year. That he's leaving. I have money on him leaving. Or sorry, I have a couple of beers on him leaving, which I will happily pay up if I lose that bet. He's a famously unreadable human being, so I'm not gonna pretend like I can read him better than anybody else, right? But I don't know, just the construction of the team was just so interesting and unique. The fact that they basically only played 7 guys through most of the last 2 series. Fred VanVleet having a baby and then immediately becoming the greatest jump shooter of all time somehow. Incredible. Pascal Siakam being like just as good as he needed to be and somehow still being like surprisingly young to be as good as he is. The thing that I was so excited about in the finals is Marc Gasol. I assumed he would get played off the floor. And if you watch the first quarter of the first game of the finals, he is so good. It's bonkers. And like he hits a couple threes, gets fouled on a layup. And his foot speed on defense is so impressive. And I just thought he was too big to play with the Warriors and too slow to play with the Warriors. And I never should have counted him out because the whole time I was like, this is the one shot he's got at the title. He's a 34-year-old big guy. Like, his skills are going to start declining at any moment. This might be his last shot. And I so badly want him to have the ring that he deserves. And I think he thought all of those things. And that's how he played as well as he did. And when he wasn't great, Serge Ibaka was great, who is a player I have had some real problems with over the years.
I recall.
I believe I have said at one point the only thing I've ever liked Serge Ibaka for was getting Terrence Ross off the team because they were traded for each other. But I think the Gasol, because Gasol is a famously good passer, Serge Ibaka is not a very good passer. But when you look at the way that Serge Ibaka played, especially in the last few games of the finals, he was awesome in the last 3 games. And he started to make some passes that I didn't realize Serge Ibaka could make. And I feel like there was like a real, I don't know that Marc Gasol would necessarily be like, Serge, this is what you do in this position or whatever. But I feel like they must have learned from each other in some capacity. And especially Serge becoming a better, much better playmaker. He made some like really impressive, really tough passes in the last few games of the finals. And it was really cool to watch. Yeah,
and they can learn that from each other, even if it's not direct. I know what you mean. Yeah. You mentioned the Warriors. Do you think this changes anything for the way people look at them?
No, because it kind of feels like... no, I don't. It's so unfortunate what happened to them with all the injuries. I don't believe the Raptors would beat the Warriors if the Warriors were at full strength, but they were so impressive in the finals that maybe they do. I don't know. Maybe they beat them in seven, but that Kevin Durant thing.
Do you think there's a bit of an asterisk?
No, because the Warriors, you can only play who's in front of you, that old adage in sports. And the Warriors in 2015 beat the Cavs when Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving were both out of the game and they were just basically playing LeBron and the rest of the pieces. You know, there were at least two Splash Brothers in five of the six games. You know, and
yeah,
as they proved again and again, they're damn near impossible to beat. And that's the thing I was most looking forward to next season, was hoping that Kevin Durant would leave and we just get the Splash Brother Warriors back. Like a beatable, yeah, but still so much fun team to watch.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
But who knows what'll happen.
Like getting 9 points just straight.
Oh, and Clay in game six. That was just absolute vintage Clay. Like, I love him so much. He's one of my favorite players. And yeah, just again with the, similarly to Kyle Lowry and Marc Gasol, just such an interesting personality and so goddamn good at basketball that I've just, it doesn't matter what team he plays for, I would always like that dude.
How do you feel about this finals being one of the first ones that a lot of people would pay attention to? Do you think it was a good one for people who don't watch that often?
Well, it's weird because I feel kind of shitty that I love going back and watching old basketball games, especially when, like old intense basketball games, especially when the team I was rooting for, won the game. And the two really good games of the finals are the two games the Warriors won. So like, I don't know which game I can go back and watch, in the future. Like, I mean, I recently watched 2016's game seven again, just because it's been a year, it's time to do it again and see the LeBlanc in context. But, I don't know. I guess it's game four, you know, is the one that I would rewatch. But as far as a finals that Canada was watching, there was a lot of really good basketball, you know, and as somebody who spent a lot of my youth being very frustrated with how difficult it was to find basketball on television, specifically because I grew up in a hockey country, I feel like kids are no longer going to have that problem. And it's all because of Kawhi, you know? And that's super cool. And I know that's me being like, I want the world to fit what I want the world to be. But everybody kind of wants that. And if people cared more about basketball in this country, I'd be very happy. And I mean, they do. That was already happening over the last handful of years anyway. But nothing gets kids wanting to play basketball like seeing the one team in their country win a title. So
yeah. Well, but don't you think it'd be easier to find games inevitably, like with
yes, that is true. That is
the way
true.
Technology moves.
But even if you're just looking at the lineup of highlights on SportsCenter, you don't have to watch 400 hockey games anymore to get to one basketball game, which used to 100% be the way it was. So not that I would ever watch SportsCenter if I was 15 in 2019. You know.
But so what do you think about next year?
Who gives a shit?
Not
I don't.
That.
Yeah, there's so much player movement going on. And the one thing that has frustrated me the most about the NBA media over the last little bit is that they haven't talked about the finals enough. They haven't talked about the Raptors winning enough, because this is a really cool team. And it's a really once in a generation type of team. Like, there have only been two other surprise champions this millennium, being the Pistons and the Mavs. everybody else was like, yeah, this makes sense. And the Raptors winning the title doesn't really make sense. And so many things needed to happen. So many things needed to go right. Kawhi needed to play basketball as well as any human being has ever played basketball. and then do so while still very injured. Like, watch his post-game press conference after game six and watch him try to walk down the steps after the, like, he's so hurt. He can only take the step yeah. 1 foot at a time. It's unbelievable. And like, he wasn't good in game six by his standards, but still, like, I can see why he wasn't good in game six. Apparently only one of his legs works. So
yeah, that was pretty incredible.
Yeah. The Raptors won the title, and at some point I'll believe it. I think like the thing that really sort of captured everything for me was that after the Raps made the finals, which is weirdly when I feel like I felt the most like I'm 16 again sort of happiness, and I can't believe this is happening. But I checked in with Chuck Swirsky on Twitter, former Raptors announcer, famously fantastic announcer. He would always say, get out the salami and cheese, mama, this ball game is over when the game is over. He had just posted a photo of salami and cheese and just the tweet, double order for tonight. And I was like, that's great. And after game six,
so good.
And after game six, I went out in the absurd city that we had, just people shooting off fireworks on the top of buildings just down the street from me, and just parades of cars, a guy actually ghost riding his car and high-fiving people the whole time. It was truly unbelievable. And I assume this was happening everywhere. Like, I live near Bloor Street, yeah. So like, it's a main street, but it was really awesome to see. And then I'm just like, I can't sleep. I'm just going to sit on the couch and watch post-game interviews forever that I've recorded. And I'm just like, oh, I'll check in on Swirsky, see what he tweeted tonight. And he's tweeting all these thank yous to the people he worked with in the Raptors, congratulating everybody, like Jack and Leo and all the people that he's worked with, and just listing Raptors from the past and why he loved them. And it was so adorable. And then he tweeted, I'm retiring. Like, he posted that same picture of the salami and cheese, and he said, retiring the salami and cheese tonight forever. And I was just like, it was like, it's the dumbest thing, but I was like, this is the final like page of the storybook that is the Raptors winning a championship. It's the this phrase that I've so associated the Raptors with in my head, and it's just like, they don't need the salami and cheese anymore, because
no, it's done.
They got the biggest salami and cheese sandwich that there was.
Mama knows.
Yeah, I thought about buying salami and cheese and bread and bringing it to a bar afterwards, but then I that would involve planning on them winning, which I wasn't emotionally prepared to do. But I thought that would have been a funny thing, just to roll up to where my friends were after the game with salami and cheese sandwiches.
Absolutely. Hopefully Chuck was there. Yeah. He'd get it.
I mean, I've still got his bobblehead. He's with me in my heart at all times. Yeah. So thanks for listening to the McGuffin Man. I trust you don't have much more to add on the Raps.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
How did
it feel as somebody that's removed from basketball? Like, I care about basketball at all times. It doesn't matter who wins the title. Did you find yourself watching more basketball?
Oh yeah. I would watch playoff sports, of a lot of sports, NBA, mm-hmm. but this one I watched like not every minute of every game, but
yeah,
pretty much every game.
But this is something that would, like, you would never plan your life around watching playoffs, is sort of the feeling I get from you, unless something like this is happening, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas why... a Mavericks, like Blazers round one, game two for me is like appointment television.
Yeah, no, not to that level, but yeah. It was still interesting watching it snowball entirely, you know? Yeah. Like, I remember explaining Kawhi to people during the trade and not knowing, I mean, after the trade, not knowing as much as some people, but knowing more than some people. And mm-hmm. then, you know, as these things escalate and more people start watching, you see just crowds become bigger and people learning about it. And so, I know more this year than I would have before at the same time. So
yeah.
It's good.
Yeah. Yeah. And, go Raps, I guess. I don't know.
Go basketball is the real message here, but the Raptors somehow are the kings of basketball right now. And, and that's truly unbelievable to me. They went 3-0 in Oracle in the finals. Like, I still can't wrap my head around that.
Yeah, and that's going to be the last game there. So yeah. It's a nice note for them to leave on.
Yeah. I knew as soon as they had the singer from Train singing the anthem on the last night of Oracle, I was like, this is over. They don't care.
they're never going to top this.
Yeah. They like game 3 or 4, they've got Metallica. And then in game 6, fuck it, Train. You know? Yeah. But anyway, thanks for listening to the MacGuffin then.